Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
You must remember this as the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, we now have three ways for you to listen online. You can listen, of course, on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. But now, 92.9 FM ESPN is available on both the TuneIn and the iHeartRadio apps, as well as their website. So you can always stream us from just about anywhere that you have a solid internet connection. No Tim for the next couple of weeks. He is going to be taking some vacation after pulling off, I think, maybe one of the greatest swindles of all time. He has convinced VSIN to send him to Hawaii for a work trip. So he's going to get week zero for Hawaii season opener. But Tim taking some much-needed vacation, so we'll see him again, or we'll talk to him again, I believe, on August the 5th. So George Ruggiero hanging out with me, of course, the producer of the program, also been in the producer's chair since 11 a.m. Good day, George.
Good afternoon. How do we get in on that with Tim? Is there any shot?
I don't know, because that is something also that's kind of gone away in this era of radio. Like post-pandemic, the remotes are not really as much of a thing. I mean, obviously the easiest way to do it is if you can sell it, like literally, as in like you can get it sponsored.
Get it sponsored, yeah.
And then you convince somebody. I think that's what he actually did. I think he convinced a big sponsor to pay for their show to go to Hawaii to preview week zero.
Of all places, that's the kicker there for me is it's Hawaii.
We have to at least like spend on it. Like, yeah, I mean, Honolulu is not the nicest place in Hawaii. Like, you know, he's not going to Maui. Like that's about the only spin zone that we can realistically have, because
is there even a week zero game happening out there?
Yes. Hawaii does start the season.
But against who?
I remember thinking it's kind of a
sneaky good game.
Because week zero is now in that weird purgatory of...
They have Stanford.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was at least like I remember thinking like, oh, that's like an actual game. Because week zero this year, we have Idaho State at UNLV.
Yeah.
Game TBD. These are all on Saturday.
Yeah.
Iowa State at K-State.
That...
We're doing Farmageddon in Ireland. I still haven't come to grips with how I feel about that.
The fact to me that it's a conference game and like not a small one either.
No, I mean
in week zero.
I mean it's
those are two good programs.
The reality is half the teams in the league, you could make the argument, have a claim to being a title contender, but those two are definitely at the top
of the race.
Actually
in the mix, yeah. Where we look at them and we're like, okay, I could see that.
For the Big 12 title. Also, Fresno State at Kansas. Kansas will be opening up their new stadium, or their newly renovated stadium. I have no problem with saying it's their new stadium. They basically
Did they just gut it? And
yeah, it's okay. Like they've done the zoom or drone fly throughs. I mean, it looks pretty sweet. Then we also have Sam Houston State at Western Kentucky.
Is that a conference game too?
That should be CUSA, right?
I think it is.
I believe that's a CUSA game. Because there was 1 year week zero was like exclusively CUSA. I do remember that. And then we close out the nightcap 6:30 p.m. on CBS, not CBS Sports Network, on CBS. We have Stanford at Hawaii. For
they get the big stage.
Also, I didn't realize that Iowa State, Kansas State games on ESPN, but I guess it was on ESPN last year.
It was
Florida State, Georgia Tech.
Yes.
Because remember we had that weird situation where Florida State was like the first ever 0-1 top 10 team.
Yeah.
Because we didn't do it.
They don't do a re-ranking.
We did the preseason poll.
Yes, and they don't re-rank.
They don't
after
re-rank
zero.
It after week zero, and then they did week one, so they were 0-1, still ranked 10th in the top 25. So we've got all that. As George has mentioned, I have scoured the internet in a week full of, at times depressing, at times weird, but certainly one of the more newsy last full weeks of July that I can really ever remember. I've scoured the internet and I've found some good news, so I want to discuss that. We will briefly mention Sam's Shoemaker story, which it's one of those stories where you believe it in the sense of like, I have no problem like with the reporting and really.
It's great reporting. The reporting itself has been awesome.
It's fantastic reporting. It's so well reported that no one has really kind of even done the, well, it's not actually like that. Like the closest thing we've had is Taj Riel's
agency, you know,
representatives,
their state.
Which totally, I'd like to see the business cards of that team. That felt very much like not a professional outlet. Clearly, they had put a prompt into some AI software that spat out, here's the statement, and it was laugh out loud funny at just how like factually wrong it was.
It's not even just that to me. The fact that there's a big part of the agency statement, that's essentially him just eating it. That's just saying, you know what? Yeah.
Well,
it sucks, but like it.
Let's go through it because there's a couple of things that I truly love. So if you've completely missed the story, I don't know how. Sam Shoemaker has now reported and he has kept the receipts or showed his work, if you will, that Taj Riel, after being dismissed from the University of Memphis, sent not only game plan, but signals to Owen McCown, the starting quarterback of UTSA. No one even today at the American Media Days. That's where I noticed it. Where I really am going to struggle with dropping the acronym, because remember, they're not the AAC anymore.
It's the American.
There's something about saying the American Media Days, because then it just kind of feels like an airline or maybe like... the American Airlines Center. Like, I feel like my natural is like when it's the American, it's almost like there's something that should be following it, but Media Days doesn't feel like the appropriate word choice.
Can they not just say the American Conference?
Yeah,
I guess. Or is that already a thing?
So, you tell me if you buy this. I think if you're just calling it the American, there's something about, like, when you say the American Conference, I almost felt like it sounded better American Conference. You probably need to keep the.
Yeah.
They probably can't pull a Sean Parker. Drop the. Probably got to keep the. All right. So this was...
we do need articles around here.
Prestige Pro Sports. Keep in mind that word prestige. It's going to factor in a little bit later. Statement regarding Taj Riel for immediate release. In light of recent reports surrounding our client, Taj Riel, and the allegations stemming from his time prior to leaving the University of Memphis, We feel it is important to address the situation directly. Hang in there, y'all. They will not address the situation directly. This has been a difficult period for all involved. I don't think so. I think it's only been a difficult period for Taj. While there are differing perspectives on what occurred, that's actually not true at all.
We have the messages. We have the DMs.
Everyone is pretty much in agreement of what happened. Now, there's some disagreement to what degree it helped, but everyone acknowledges what happened.
Yes.
Taj acknowledges that errors in judgment may have been made. You think?
There is one thing with the DMs I want to go back and look at.
Yeah.
Do we have a timestamp? At what time of day or night were these posted or were these sent? Because Instagram usually keeps them on there.
See, this is where you're on the gram and I'm not. Because that was the other question that Jeff and I had. We were trying to figure out whether or not there was a connection between Taj and Owen.
We did find this out. Yes, there is. They were former teammates in high school.
Okay, because Jeff's question was, well, if why wouldn't this have been done via text? And I said, my instinct is I agree with you. If I were texting a friend or a teammate, I would text them. I always leave room for I have no idea what kids are doing now. Like, I don't know how they communicate. Like,
it feels
like a lot of them are.
Why I was asking and why I was wondering. So the actual screenshot is from 7:21, and there's no AM or PM, so I'm going to assume that's PM. But when you first,
I'm not sure Taj strikes me as an early riser.
No, not quite. But why I say that, or why I ask is, and they're also watching Roku. Okay. When you first message someone, and it's been a little while after the or before the first message, it'll say like date and time when it was sent.
Right.
So but we don't see that. All we get is half the picture of what looks like two or three pictures of playbooks, which, okay, that's a lot there already. And then to give actual coverage notes on top of that is also a choice.
Okay, I'm trying to think. Okay, where are you seeing the date and time? Because the only picture I see is...
So the one that Sam posted...
Because I see the one in the story that he has linked.
I just went to Sam's actual Twitter.
Okay, so Sam, I know, had multiple screen. There's only one screenshot in the actual story.
So on the one on Sam's actual Twitter page has like the full like phone where you can even see up at the top the time and like 20% battery. You better plug that thing in, and that's it. So you don't see the date and time.
You see it on the screenshot. Okay, I thought you were talking about in the actual message you would see a timestamp.
But this doesn't go back far enough. Okay. That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to this just absolutely delightful.
It's a winner.
This absolutely delightful, I guess, apology or whatnot. Like, I don't even know exactly how to characterize it.
It's just a statement. Errors, words.
Errors in judgment may have been made. I do like leaving room of, again, maybe we have a point of view problem. It's like,
No. No, we don't.
No. I mean, I guess the only way you can say errors in judgment is if you somehow could convince yourself that what he did was right.
This is where
I never know. Like, are there people that actually believe, like, all right, well, he was dismissed from the team, so it's okay that he can get his revenge? Like, I don't
know.
I don't know anyone.
Neither do I.
But, like, I always leave room for, I don't know, have we now reached the point where it's such an individualistic society where it's just like...
Are people that cynical to where they just don't care?
Well, like, this is what has been, like, truly blown my mind. There have been coaches, one in particular, that I truly hate. We have all probably at some point or another had someone play in front of us.
Sure.
It typically tends to happen. I've never had the instinct to be like, let me go figure out a way that I can screw this up. Like, hey, let me go send you our signals. Let me give you anything, any type of information that would help. I don't understand this instinct.
I think for most people, I would, and by most I mean 99.9% of people, the wires, like, it just doesn't click. There's nothing that connects between, okay, just because I may have been done wrong, which we talked about this earlier with Jason and John, I want to say earlier on in the summer when he was let go the first time, it was for pawning off a teammate's PlayStation.
Yeah, he was, I don't know, accused, I don't know, like, the story was he stole from teammates and sold it.
Yes. And so, then let back on the team because they needed depth. And then he's not playing because he was a depth piece, which is kind of the whole point of that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know. This instinct to just, like, sell out your old teammates like that. And by the way,
does not compute.
This guy sounds like a real piece of work.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're attempting here, and we'll get into the latter part of the statement. They're attempting to continue his career. If I'm a coach, I'm just not even taking him. Because
he's still at Purdue. Purdue said in a different statement, hey, we're good.
We'll find out.
What? Yeah.
Like,
training camp is coming up.
Correct.
We'll get there.
There's no way he is good enough to justify putting up with this.
No.
Like, even like, okay, let's take a different example. A guy that was accused and likely guilty of stealing from his teammates was Patrick Reed when he was at Georgia.
Yeah.
They put up with it for a little bit, and then all of a sudden they had a bunch of other good players, and all of a sudden Patrick's services are not needed. See you later.
Like, Makes perfect sense to me.
Like, there's just no way this guy's good enough. At no point was there any intent to harm teammates or compromise the integrity of the game he loves? How can you simply even put that in a statement?
That is...
He literally just said, here's our playbook, I'll get you the signals. Do you think that is... There's no intent there? Like...
Oh, it's... It's not even that. He also... Think about it like this. The first message, or first two messages after the actual playbook is... telling the quarterback how to read the playbook correctly.
Yeah, far left is coverages.
If that in itself isn't the dead ringer of intent, I don't know what is.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. This obviously is the home of don't tell the story, tell your story. But part of it is like bending the truth to be in a... But it's not just outright lying.
No, this is just straight up...
Correct.
A lie. Like, we have the receipts. They're right here. We've got them.
I'm going to bet that no one at Prestige Sports is... Excuse me, Prestige Pro Sports.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet there's not a high level of certification of agency.
I am inclined to agree.
I'm willing to bet these are more street agents.
Sure.
Runners, as we used to call them back in the biz. Taj holds a deep respect for the sport of football. I mean, I guess that's the one thing you could maybe at least like say, all right, I don't have something outright.
Yeah, I can't, okay, like, I can't straight up deny that.
This part, however, you can't.
Yeah.
His fellow athletes and the opportunities he's worked hard to earn.
Okay.
There's no question he has zero respect for his fellow athletes, teammates, nor the opportunities that he's worked hard to earn. He was given a second chance at Memphis. He has zero value of the opportunities.
No.
He has found his way to where he's now going to have to work his way back at a school he hasn't even played at. As he turns the page on this chapter, says who, Taj is fully committed to personal growth and accountability, both on and off the field, which leads into the next paragraph, which is just laugh out loud funny. The sentence that follows... As he turns the page on this chapter, Taj is fully committed to both personal growth and accountability, both on and off the field. I'm not making this up. I'm not skipping down. This is the next sentence. We ask the public and media for understanding and privacy as Taj takes the necessary steps to reflect, rebuild, and contribute positively to the prestigious Purdue University athletic program, which has offered him a second chance and a platform to prove his character and dedication. He takes full accountability, but by that, I'm not taking questions. Leave me alone. That's a very different definition of accountability than I think would actually be the definition of accountability. Taj is ready to move forward, give everything he has to his new team, and make the most of the opportunity ahead. End quote. We also, Sam, I believe, also retweeted the Memphis DB's coach referring to snakes. I'd ask even Barry this. Barry Odom, obviously the head coach of Purdue.
What'd you think?
I'd ask him this. Like, why do you need this guy? Like, I get it. You're 1-11. It's year one.
Yeah.
He wasn't good enough to get on the field in Memphis.
I mean, that's the thing. He did in spurts, but it was never enough.
But there's no way that his talent is worth putting up with this. And I'm willing to bet this, there will be another incident.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to look at it that way, repeat offender. Burned his teammates once, somehow got back on the team just because they needed bodies.
I just
burned them on the way out the door.
I just find it hard to believe if your instinct is, I'm going to steal my buddy's PlayStation and go sell it for money, and then my other instincts are,
let's burn all the bridges I can on my way out the
door. I got kicked off the team, and so now I'm going to go and give the defensive plays. You're not wired to be a contributor to a team.
No.
You are clearly wired, and that's fine. Maybe he'll be successful in something else. You are wired to only think about yourself. And he is not good enough to be that. Like, Deion can be selfish, or whoever you want to name.
Sure.
Meon, whatever. Like,
but that's because they were the best player on the field.
By the way, no stories of Deion Sanders selling his teammate's stuff after stealing it.
Can't say that I've seen any of
those. Not a lot of those out there. So, I don't know. That was just great job by Sam Shoemaker. He will be on with Gabe later this afternoon. But that was one of the weirder, I mean.
Funny enough, like when we talked about it, what was it, either last week or the week before last when it first came out?
Yeah.
We were kind of like, okay, there might be something here, you know.
It wasn't one of those things where
we didn't play it off like it was nothing.
We didn't talk about like, well, that was the other thing. We also didn't dismiss it like it didn't happen. I do think that this is where there is some gray area. To what degree?
Did it actually help?
Correct. Because I did also find Sam inspired me to go do some internet sleuthing as on my own. So for those that don't know, like you can go back to other teams' schedules on their official website, and more times than not, the media relations people will link the post-game quotes. And so I did find this. I will say this. Owen McCown played it pretty close to the vest. Now, it's also fair to note, no one at the time knew, and so it's not like, but Owen didn't give any indication of, hey, man, we were super prepared.
Yeah.
I did like this one from Jeff Taylor. This was the very first question of the post-game presser. How did you guys pull this one out today? You know, it was just one of those days. Kids just kept making plays. It really was unbelievable. It was a tale of two halves. In the first half, our offense, the way they were executing, was as good as I've seen with literally game day adjustments. As if they knew what was happening.
That's interesting.
Now, to be clear, do I think that ultimately decides the whole part of the game? No, because if you go back and remember, there were some turnovers.
Yeah, Memphis had some turnover issues, penalty issues. Like,
Memphis didn't play great on offense, but I mean,
and they didn't play great on defense.
I believe
all year,
it was
for what
one
it's
of.
Worth.
I think it was one of two games that McCown did not have a turnover-worthy throw.
Okay.
It was their second highest points per drive on the season. Because, like, everyone kept going straight to just, like, total yardage. Like, okay, well, this wasn't the most total yards that Memphis has given up, but it was a very different game. Like, I can acknowledge the North Texas game is going to have probably, what, I don't know.
Some pretty 20, nasty stats.
Well, I was like, going to say, what, 20 more snaps each side, maybe?
Probably. I mean, it was just up and down, up and down.
40 more snaps? I mean, somewhere in that area? So the yardage number is going to get out of hand. They also did not give up a sack. I believe that was the only...
I think like the little things like that are where something like this comes into a lot more play is finding where you actually need to have your guys for stuff like protections. I mean, the one of the clips that we picked out was the running back picking up on a blitz that normally you would think, I don't know that that would
right.
normally be picked up on.
So here is though, here's where I can acknowledge that's also a little bit circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
I'm not saying that play. That play I would actually, I mean, it technically is circumstantial evidence, but that play is also one where you're like, man, you don't see that blitz picked up very often. Like there's
right,
a
right.
there's kind of a heads up on that one. But what I'm saying, the where the circumstantial evidence could come up about sacks in particular, Memphis, for the most part, plays three down linemen.
Yeah.
And kind of does the keep everything in front, play red zone roulette.
Sure.
Like, see if they can do it.
Yeah.
So that's not going to have a high sack rate. But where your point comes in, it's like, all right, well, they brought a clearly like a blitz they had put in for this week. And all of a sudden it gets picked up, no problemo, by a running back making an unbelievable block. That makes you wonder.
And it was a great block. Like, it was awesome.
Did they have... it's a lot easier to make that block when you know this guy's
you
coming.
You know a guy's coming down.
Correct. So,
but at the same time, like, we also should look at it and say, well, Memphis's defense wasn't great all season. That was kind of one of the big sticking points of them potentially contending beyond what, you know, they still had a very solid season.
Yeah.
Went on and won their bowl game, beat Tulane on the road, all those things. The defense did struggle all year. What was it ranked? What, sub?
I mean, that
was like in the 80s.
I mean, I want to say they were 80 in SP plus, but that's the other thing. It's like, I think they were still top half of the league. Like, that's
but it wasn't like a stellar defense to begin with, is kind of what I'm getting.
No, but like, that's the other thing. You don't have to be that good to be
competitive.
To be a good AAC defense, or excuse me.
No,
defense in the American.
It was AAC at the time, so we can.
That's true. All right. So let's see. Where would Memphis have? All right.
So that's the thing. We don't want to completely dismiss it, but I don't think that was the biggest aspect in the game that would have caused Memphis to lose. I think the turnovers, losing the turnover battle, penalties were huge in that
game
as well.
They were very sloppy.
It just was not a well-played game by Memphis.
Yeah.
This certainly didn't help matters.
And by the way, they were not the first team that picked on Memphis's secondary.
No. No.
Navy did it.
Navy did it in spades.
All right, so I did mention a little bit of good news. Well, here was some of the good news.
I love good news.
Turns out, I did not have high hopes for this. I don't think Happy Gilmore 2 is going to suck.
Oh.
Everyone's kind of doing the...
Explain.
So, Mark has watched it. Giannotto has watched it.
Yep.
And most of the reviews of people that I know that I also care about their movie opinions, like, have been like, listen, if you just accept it for what it is, it's fun. Which I
think that's what we were shooting for anyway.
That's what I was. That was the goal. So Mark says, watched Happy Gilmore 2 this morning. Obviously not as good as the original, but good enough. I was never bored, and the cameos are fun. Definitely recommend seeing it if you like the original. So that
there.
To me is like,
that's yeah,
that's cool. We'll
what
take,
we're looking for.
We'll take that. Some other good news. This, according to Ross Dellinger, NCAA basketball tournament expansion growing more unlikely for the 25-26 season.
Thank God. Sure, we're going to have to talk about it again in a year. But
I
at least for now.
I will be very curious to see. The one thing that I'll actually, and I'll also add maybe this to some good news this week. Like, I think the just trying to railroad a system that nobody asked for, I think we're quietly on kind of a winning streak. Nobody asked for tournament expansion. It looked like they were going to try to railroad it through. Unable to do so.
Love it.
For a while this summer, it looked like, and really during the spring, it looked like We were going to railroad through the 4 plus 4 plus 2 plus 2 plus 1 college football playoff format with double byes and a system that you would be unable to explain to anyone to make it make sense if they didn't, if they weren't like heavily invested in the sport. That feels like it's losing momentum. I honestly think there's a chance that we have a 12-teamer beyond this fall, which I kind of am in favor of. But also, before we get to Blake Topmeyer, because it is indeed Friday, we got this from the sports guy, Bill Simmons, on the latest podcast. I don't mean to sound the. I don't mean to start panicking New Orleans.
Oh, we talked about this. Yeah.
I'm also not sure there's enough of a fan base in place to care that much. There's an experiment that has not worked for 50-plus years in New Orleans with professional basketball. And if you and I owned a team and they asked us what we really thought, and I was like, well, definitely not enough to have players go to the 32 teams. That doesn't mean we should. We're not making so much money from the media rights. I'm not even sure you can give me back that and make it worth it. So he proposed that part of the reason why the expansion talks died last week is that with the TV deal coming in even over value from what the owners were expecting, which tells you, hat tip to Silver and the boys.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you know you got a good deal, is like even your people you work for were like, damn.
Hey, that's pretty good.
I think that was the deal that Brett Yormark thought he was going to give the Big 12 presidents. They didn't seem to care. It is good news that he's suggesting New Orleans. What I would also push back on is the Bensons still own it. What you need to kind of low-key root for is, like, we need a good old-fashioned, we need Tom Benson's second wife and his kids from his first wife. We need a good old-fashioned family dispute. Like, let's get this bad boy in court.
Yeah.
Like, let's split up the assets. We need that to happen. Although some would argue that that kind of has already happened and it didn't go that way. But we've got that. But I would also say it doesn't preclude only one. I don't know if only one team's going to get relocated. But
the other half of that, and that we mentioned,
their lease is also up in 2029 as well.
Yes, yeah. It is another lease issue
and
with the Smoothie King Center
is a much worse arena than the Forum, and also they don't really have plans to renovate.
Correct. The team wants to, but the city does not want to pay a dime. Shoot, from what we heard earlier, supposedly the city is fighting the family for $11 million for the Superdome.
From post-renovations?
Yeah.
Because I would assume what happened is the family said they'd cover overruns.
Yeah.
And it probably ran. Yeah, I can see that.
And they're fighting over it. And yeah. But that's a number that's a lot less than what a full renovation of the Smoothie King Center would entail.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer is going to join the program. We'll discuss with him the possibility of North Carolina to the ACC. He's also written about Bill Belichick. Also, he's got SEC coaches on the hot seat. We'll talk about all that with him when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Sex, murder, the magic of the movies. You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. New episodes available each and every week anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B. Topmeyer. Blake, I know that you've written about Bill Belichick today. We're going to discuss that, but I wanted to start with, did you think it was coincidental that news leaked that North Carolina was exploring membership into the ACC immediately after they finished speaking at ACC Media Days?
I really don't think it was coincidence that they announced the tickets for the season.
Yeah, all the same week. What a week of news.
Out.
Huh, how about that?
Yeah, I mean it's a clever redirect, right? I mean we see this in politics and we see it in sports.
Strike while the iron's hot.
And
coaches' contracts.
Yeah, it's been I don't know if I want to call it a tumultuous offseason at North Carolina because as I wrote, like I think this whole deal with Bill Belichick and his girlfriend is a little bit of a molehill that's been turned into an off-season mountain. I mean, if she were 20 years older and they were married, you wouldn't hear a peep about any of this. Like, coaches' wives have a presence. There's a lot of coaches.
Anybody remember Christy Malzahn?
What's that?
Anybody remember Christy Malzahn?
Yeah, exactly. But even as I wrote, I mean, like Terry Saban was very present around Alabama football and had sway over her husband Nick Saban. So, like, you know, that's not unusual for a wag to have sway over a coach. But you know, where people were really reacting to it is, yes, there's like a 50-year age gap between these two, and yes, they're not married. But my thought is like, I mean, are we really so sure that Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend, maybe can't have some sort of positive impact on the man's media persona? I mean, it's not exactly like he was loquacious as the Patriots coach. And sure, they botched the CBS interview. No denying that. I think in the grand scheme of things, that's kind of small potatoes. And when I heard him at ACC Media Days, like, he was a little bit more of a presentable face. Then I remember him as the Patriots coach being all gruff and grumble. And I think that's good for him. Like, you know, on the front door of this first season at North Carolina, I think having a positive face as much as he can and sounding like upbeat and even a little bit humorous and confident and resolute, like that's a good image for him.
Well, I've said this. I can't remember the guy's name, but the PR team that they hired after the CBS interview, I think he's done like work for the Bears. Like he's a very polished. What it's proven to me is she just like, this was always true. Like I'm not even talking about anything about the relationship. She had zero qualifications to be running Bill Belichick Enterprises, particularly the PR arm of it. She had no business doing that. She had no qualifications doing that. They brought in a real professional and we haven't heard a peep.
Yep. And that's why I say it's like, This is an off season molehill turned into a mountain. I mean, yep. if it were still going on, if she seemed to be like running the program, that'd be different. Like the interview was botched. She might well inspire him. You know, everybody mocks this thing where he's called her his muse. I mean, it's kind of a strange way of putting it, but look, I mean, if he's inspired by her to stay motivated in his older age and to have some fire and desire, that can be fine, right? A lot of us gain some inspiration from our spouses or significant others. So if she's his muse, so be it.
My wife would beg to disagree,
like, so
but
what,
continue.
Right?
No, I'm with you on that. I think, though, what I'm actually interested in is, do you think North Carolina was trying to jump the line? Because, like, that was the first thing that struck me yesterday when the North Carolina to the SEC news came out. I'm sitting there going, like, oh, they're a little worried there might be a line and they don't know how many spots are there. And to your point, they announced the tickets being sold out this year, the amount of attention that they're getting now positively about their program. I mean, I definitely don't you think they are the most interesting non-title contender in college football this year?
I mean, there's always going to be interest around Deion, but yeah, I think they're near the top of the list. For sure. And the thing about jump the line, though, is I believe, and we've talked about this for years now, I believe North Carolina has been at the head of the line since the last SEC expansion. Like if the SEC were going to expand again, and I don't know how great the appetite is, but let's just say they're going to do it. And you gave me like six guesses as to who they were going to expand with. If this is a draft, if we're drafting programs and I get the number one pick in the draft to try to predict who the SEC would want, for years now, I would have told you North Carolina. Like, since they've added Texas and Oklahoma, I would have said the next program, the next school that the SEC would be interested in, if they expand again, the list begins with North Carolina. So, yeah, I don't know if they feel a need to jump the line. I don't think they need to jump the line because, again, I think in so much as the SEC is interested in anybody, like, you know, people would think like, oh, then why not add Florida State or Clemson? You know, those are football schools that fit the brand. Sure. But if you look at the way the SEC has expanded historically, they move into neighboring states that they don't have a school in that fit the fabric and fit the tapestry of the conference. And I mean, North Carolina gets them into Charlotte. They're already there with their SEC network, but to have a school in the state, I think could be appealing. You get the brand. I don't know the great appetite for the SEC to grow, but I do think if they were to do it, I think North Carolina's at the head of the list.
Yeah, I tend to agree. What gives me a little hesitation is if I said, okay, like, because I think you and I are right there. Like, if we're saying, okay, guess who they're going to expand with, we both pick North Carolina. I get a little iffy on who I'm picking next. Like, right. If you have to get the next two correct, I think inevitably, like, I would just play the odds and say Florida State and Clemson. But don't you feel like to me that would be like, all right, I got 16 at blackjack. Like, I play by the book. I'm going to hit it, but like, I'm never going to feel good about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel good about that move.
Yeah, you put it perfectly, right? If I get the second pick in the draft, I'm like, crap, you just took North Carolina.
Can I get some odds on UVA?
You know, right. Yeah. Do I really think they're going to take UVA or Virginia Tech? No, I kind of scratched my head over that one. I mean, UVA would be more puzzling than Missouri was, frankly. I think
never.
At that point,
now, I'll say this though. Never doubt a Southerner's, particularly from like the collegiate world, never underestimate the Southerner's like admiration for UVA.
Yeah, and if we're talking about schools that, you know, fit the tapestry, the fabric, the brand.
Technically, also, I mean, compared to the other ones, it's a new state also.
Exactly. And so from that sense, I mean, Virginia would be within probably my first four or five rounds of this draft that we're kind of playing out here. But I do think if North Carolina's off the board, even though I don't know how great the appetite is for Clemson or Florida State, I might feel like I needed to pick them with my second pick, just because it's an odds game. I mean, at that point, it's like, I don't know. I don't think they're going to stick at 17. They're going to add two. Who is it? I think the next few rounds would proceed to be like Clemson, Florida State, UVA, and then I don't know who after that.
It's kind of like having the second pick in the NFL draft when everybody knows who the clear-cut number one is.
Right, just like, can I just trade down? Because, like, yeah. I don't know if I'm like,
do I really
Clemson
want Marcus Mariota?
Pick.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, picking with Clemson with my number two pick, I don't know if that's better than just, like, trading down and getting a bunch of picks at the end, because I don't know who else it would be. And to football fans, they don't understand this, and I get it, right? Like, if you're just, like, looking to acquire football schools or like, acquire rivalries, it's like, yeah, go get Clemson and Oklahoma State, or go get Clemson and Florida State and be done with it. But that's not really the way these expansions happen. I mean, first things first, it's money. But then also I do think there is something to this SEC history, like I said, of getting into markets where they're not, and strengthening and growing their footprint, but they've been consistent. They don't want to do the Big Ten thing where they're coast to coast, up and down, you know, all this type of stuff. Like, they want to be connected, and they do not want to feel not Southern. They very much want to embrace, we are the conference of the South. And so I don't think they're really going to go outside what we would consider the South. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas, are they the South? Maybe not, but we're talking about massive brands, massive riches there. At this point in realignment, realignment, you know, all those schools have been gobbled up.
I've always said it's the y'all condition. Is it a state that says y'all? Like, that's kind of, because, like, even in Oklahoma, point. Like, all right, if it's the South, no, but all my friends from Oklahoma say y'all.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, Missouri to me will always seem kind of like a little bit of an outlier. And I say that as someone who lived in the state for 8 years and I'm a Midwest native. Like, is Missouri the South? I mean, I think if you get down into the boot hill, the only thing that separates the boot hill
from West Tennessee is an imaginary line on a map.
All right, but is that like Mizzou country?
No, it's not.
Really. So the part of the state that feels a little southern is not really Mizzou country. Like you drive from St. Louis to Kansas City, which has Columbia smack dab in the middle. Like that interstate is Mizzou country, and that strip of land is not southern. That's very Midwestern, and the culture there is very Midwestern.
And like it's one of those things where it's like, okay, is it a perfect no? But is it like, it's not like Rutgers to me. Like that's the other
Correct.
Thing is like, if you just use the context of when Mizzou joined the league, it was a time and place in which they needed a new major television market. St. Louis, Kansas City provided it. That was a time in which that was factored in. Like, that was the single biggest factor. Like, it's not as big of a nothing burger, I think, as people still think it is, but it's still not the number one thing. And so it's kind of where I'm like, the only thing that ever bothered me about Missouri is just like, really, you're putting them in the East just to like shoehorn this? Like, that was the only thing I was like, that just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but you're exactly right about the addition at the time. It was, you know, the SEC network was about ready to launch, and you know, top 20, top 30 TV markets really mattered at that time as they were getting ready to roll out this network, and they did it very successfully. I mean, I think, you know, the other conference networks have kind of been playing catch up to the SEC network. The Big Ten network has done it reasonably well, but I think the SEC network really did it without any hiccup, and you know, they were very strategic about it. And part of that was getting, you know, two metro TV markets that they wouldn't have otherwise been in, St. Louis and Kansas City, into the mix.
Well, and then also, you know, I mean, obviously A&M was, I think A&M was close to a no-brainer. But, I mean, you added literally, what, the third biggest media market in the entire country?
Yeah, that was a slam dunk at that time.
We're talking with Blake Topmeyer, of course, of the USA Today Sports Network. Okay, over on your podcast, you did the SEC Hot Seat Rankings. So here's the question that I have for you, because obviously you and John Adams' list wasn't exactly the same, but you had similar names. The question that I have for you is, what gets these guys off of the hot seat? So let's start with the first, Mark Stoops. Are we in agreement that what gets them off the hot seat is literally just getting back to a bowl, 6-6?
I think so. The biggest thing protecting Mark Stoops is that buyout is massive. I've got it figured at about $40 million right now. It'll tick down a little bit throughout the fall, but that's a huge number to get rid of a Kentucky football coach. So yeah, I think, you know, go play in the Gasparilla Bowl or whatever. And Mark Stoops is fine.
Yeah. I just think if they get to 6, which
is hard.
Yeah.
You,
I mean,
you know, looking at Kentucky's roster, I don't think that's a given, but yeah, that's the thing.
No, I mean, like, but hey, you know, it's basically beating Louisville and then winning two league games. Like, is that impossible? No, but again, do they have the roster to do it? Remains to be seen. All right, these are where it starts to get interesting to me. Billy Napier. Because Billy Napier went from, what, before the Texas game, we had the weird University of Florida, like, preemptively announcing we're keeping him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we later find out, okay, DJ wasn't playing that Texas game. They get absolutely slaughtered. You're like, oh, they did that so that we wouldn't have to do the song and dance the rest of the year. But they finish out with a couple of nice wins. But it is that weird thing where it's like it felt like they had momentum coming into the season, and yet here he is, and I'm with you. I think he feels like he's still right back on the hot seat. What gets him off?
I think he still is, and that buyout figure continues to tick down. It's now getting into more reasonable territory. I think the best thing Napier has going for him is he has – an AD in Scott Strickland who's staunchly in his corner, and also there is still no permanent president at Florida. It's been over a year now where Florida has had an interim president. You know, and not to get too far in the weeds, but as we probably know, like they tried to hire the president from Michigan, and the Board of Governors in Florida said, not so fast, we're not hiring that person. And so here they are. They still don't have a president. And I And I don't think Scott Strickland is going to fire Billy Napier. He's just not going to do it. And so until they get a president that can turn up the heat, that provides some protection to Billy Napier. What doesn't provide protection is that schedule. It's brutal, as we know. So how does he get himself another year? I think even 8-4 might make Florida kick the can down the road one more year, because they can use the schedule as an excuse and say, hey, we play the hardest schedule in the land, got to 8-4. We were right in the hunt. It also depends, like, what does 8-4 look like? If you're beating Florida State, losing some of those top 10 matchups, but you know, you're landing some punches, maybe you beat Tennessee and Florida State. I think 8-4 could get him into another year. 7-5 or worse, particularly if they get a new president in there. I'd be feeling a pretty warm seat, I think, if I'm Billy Napier.
No, I was joking with my old boss on his show yesterday that if they went 8-4, they might have actually be the team that Tony Petitti was talking about. You know, an 8-4 team, like, let's say they lose at Miami. That's a non-con loss. But let's say they go 5-3 in league, and then they beat Florida State. Like, that's an 8-4 team that roster-wise I'd bank on, but they're not a playoff team. But, like, that would be the actual example where I'd be like, okay, that's probably a pretty good team.
Yeah, pretty rare example, but you're right. When Petitti was saying what's so wrong with 8-4 teams making the playoff, and we all kind of laughed. Yeah, if Florida or Oklahoma went 8-4 this year, you could maybe make a case of like, oh yeah, it wouldn't be a disaster if that 8-4 team with those schedules made the playoff. And 8-4 Iowa making it, I don't know if I'm going for that.
Oh boy. All right, so let's get now to, I think this was another interesting one for me, because I think Brent Venables is so interesting this year, because I think most people agree that they are clearly, they have leveled up in talent. They think the roster's better, but it's this weird situation where Joe Castiglione retires, and what does that look like? It's one of those things where it's like, okay, I think they could be better. I think they could also be better. Like, they could be a full game better and be 7-5.
Right. Yeah, and I think they need to be better than 7-5, particularly with his AD, the one who gave him this contract extension. Because that was the thing before. It was like, how does Oklahoma fire him, you know, 18 months after an extension and justify that? Well, you justify that with your AD's retiring, and so the new person that they hire, whomever that's going to be, can just say, like, well, I didn't make this extension. Don't blame me for that. I came in here and saw we needed a change. So to avoid that situation, either the AD search needs to take a long time, and there is no AD when it comes firing time for the coach, or I think 9-3 would get Venables to another season, even if 9-3 doesn't get him in the playoff, which I actually think 9-3 might get him into the playoff with that schedule. 9-3, I think, gets him into another year. 8-4 or worse, knowing that it is Oklahoma, the standards there are incredibly high. They're not used to losing at all, and he's had two losing seasons in a three-year span. They clearly put a lot of investment into this team. When you look at what they did in the portal, the staff restructuring, if they go 8-4 worse, I think it's uncomfortable for him.
This is another interesting name, Hugh Freeze, because I think conventional wisdom would say, all right, if they win 8-4, considering you've always got Georgia and Alabama on your schedule. Now, it is one of those years where they get them both at home, so knock one of them off, and you know that's always going to be a feather in your cap. But I've had some people around Auburn tell me, it's like, he's got to make the playoff. And I just kept thinking to myself, if that's the standard, why did you bring him back?
Yeah, I don't know if I think he's got to make the playoff. I mean, maybe if he offends every donor along the way and doesn't make the playoff, then that's one thing. But is the bar suddenly to make the playoff? I don't think it probably is here in year three. I do think after four straight losing seasons, two of them under Hugh, it has to be better. And better can't be 6-6. You know, better can't be.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Sex, murder, the magic of the movies. You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.